Live from One Buck Place, it is the Ira Kaufman podcast. That clap you heard was Mr. Kaufman clapping for his own podcast. How about that, Ira?
Somebody's got to acknowledge it, Steven.
Somebody has to. Well, thankfully, the people who have acknowledged it in the greatest way possible live and breathe and work at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, proud sponsors of all your work on JoeBucksFan.com, Ira. And you know what? Ed Morse is going to save you, Ira. The savings rush is on at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Get clearance pricing on every 2017 in stock that time of year, end of September. Every 2017 must go. Rush to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa or visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, where you'll be at the Ed Morse family of dealerships on September 30th, back for the return of the Alfa Romeo Italian Feast.
But we're not can't keep a good man down, is Vince.
They can't keep you away from that food. You confirmed in 36 seconds when I said this is the new date.
I saw the word cannoli and I signed up, my friend.
But anyway, folks can look for that information on JoeBucksFan.com in a few days or so, Saturday, noon, September 30th at Ed Morse Alfa Romeo. But we're not talking about
that. And by that time, the Bucks could be 2-0, Stephen. They could be 2-0 with the Giants coming to town. The big, bad New York Giants, Mr. Risbitz, a team after your own heart.
Wouldn't that be something? But you know what, Ira? Before that, right now, you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon with their new certified, like new, certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs, Ira.
They check them out thoroughly.
Inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. I know you know that about Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. You've been down there yourself. And right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Financing is for a limited term. All the details are at the dealership. But those are our friends, Ira, the great Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. So, Sage, here we are. We're at One Buck Place. I'm Steve Isbitz here with Lee DeKemper. We're the kingpins at JoeBucksFan.com.
DeKemper seems to be engrossed in his Twitter account over here, Russ. Steve, any idea who's tweeting him? Could Rachel Watson be on the other end of this tweet?
The man is all over the news.
Something up over here. I don't know. Something about Mexico.
No. I'm just gawking at chicks on Instagram. What can I say?
Well, that would have been my third guess, right?
Was it Mexico or were they Mexican women? What do we have here? Both. Okay.
Both.
You know, of course, our hearts go out to what's gone on in Mexico City.
And Puerto Rico.
And in Puerto Rico. Unbelievable. The footage that we've seen here in the last hour. Of course, we're taping this Wednesday at One Buck.
They say Maria's going to turn north, Steve. Now, they did say that about Irma, too. So until it does, I'm on pins and needles because I lost power for 3 days, and a lot of people had it a lot worse than I did. But that storm did a lot of damage, and let's hope we escape Maria.
But Timmy Russo was safe.
I understand, and I'll take care of that later today.
And, of course, Lee's referring to Chris Mad Dog Russo's son. Of course, you're on the Mad Dog, SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Your national spotlight.
I'm sure, you know, he asked me about Hurricane Irma last week. And of course, he's probably going to ask why more people didn't show up at the Bucks-Bears game. But those that did, Steve, that were wearing Buck colors and the stick carriers were out in force. You said more than 1,000. Which is very impressive.
In the march, yes.
In the march.
Actually, even saw a new video of the march, which is very impressive.
And so all those people went home very happily. And, you know, while Mike Smith laments a late touchdown that spoiled the shutout, I don't think Buck fans cared one way or another.
Oh, they wanted the shutout, too. But I wonder if Timmy Russo was in that group, the stick carriers. And the reason why I bring up Timmy Russo, we have a celebrity in our midst in Tampa Bay. Chris Russo's son, Tim, goes to University of Tampa.
He does. He's a freshman.
So, Ira, your podcast. Now, you always, every time I see you here, how am I doing with the commish? How am I comparing
numbers.
To his podcast? Numbers. Am I still the king?
Is Justin kicking my rear end?
What's going on here? I need to know.
They're going to dance any of
Pulowski. Well, I mean, you know, Pulowski is a very formidable. And he's not a competitor because we're both working for the same site.
I know you're always looking for love, Ira. So I did, from Tuesday's podcast, I did print out. We haven't talked about some of your foreign listeners and the scope of your sage wisdom and where it goes in a while. But I did pull this up, Ira. You know what? Germany, 13 listeners on the last Tuesday's podcast.
Go Munich.
Ireland, you're up to 12. You've had a jump in
you're
Ireland.
In Germany, huh? Wow.
I have Van Morrison is listening to me from Belfast over there, Lee.
Van Morrison, I thought he was dead.
No, he's not dead.
Oh, is that right?
No, I thought he died. He was at Ruth Deckard a couple of months ago. I hope he wasn't dead.
Wow.
So as we go down the list, we got in Panama, 3 listens or downloads in Panama. So unless Javier's really listening quite a bit to your sage
wisdom.
Well,
he's got family. Stevie's got family. I understand.
Yeah, that's a little bit of growth.
Here's the critical question. I've asked this before, and I'll ask it again. Does the custodian Canton have any listeners at the Vatican?
I'm not sure we have data on that, but Steve, is North Korea showing up on that thing?
The Korean. Well, you know what? It only comes up as the Korean Republic, and that's showing 8. So 8? Those are probably U.S. servicemen out there at the.
I might be able to help in this conflict over there.
You know, Vatican City is a sovereign nation. I thought maybe that would show up.
Now, Steve, you're shying away from the data about the downloads, and that tells me that I'm not doing too well.
No. As of now, as of we tape this on iTunes, Ira, the Commission's Monday podcast is number 1. Number 1 in
the
rotating.
Nothing wrong with
that. And you are also number 2. So there you go. You're number 2 in the rotation of the episodes, and I'm actually checking in at number 5. My Monday podcast.
Nice.
So how about that? So
Lee, remember those old Avis commercials? We're number 2, we try harder. I guess I'll have to try a little harder.
I vaguely remember
there
that.
You go.
And as we head down the rest of the list of the JoeBucksFan.com podcast family, we got a lot of different episodes from you and the commish checking in there. And the Scuttlebucks, our Wednesday podcast, is right now 23, ranked number 23 among the episodes.
I want to congratulate you, Steve. You cracked the top 5. And for somebody that's only been doing this for a month or less,
a couple
that's
months.
Impressive.
Well, we'll see. You got to have staying power, Ira. Cracking it doesn't mean anything. You know how this goes.
All right,
enough of that. Ira's podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and, of course, at JoeBucksFan.com.
So we're speaking from one buck place today, Steve.
One buck.
We just went to the locker room.
You just got out of a news conference with Mike Smith. You just got out of the locker room, sniffing around like you do. You're everywhere. Give us some reactions.
Was I a mollusk today? and getting in people's grills?
You were. Give me something, some interesting juice from the locker room.
Well, I happen to mention to Marpet, he's now facing yet another challenge as he tries to transition from guard to center. Again, I want our listeners to remember this. He has never played center before, even in high school. Never. So I think he's making a lot of progress. By his own words, Lee, after Sunday's game, which was a smashing victory, he didn't think he played that well. I like that about Marpet. In fact, I like that about this whole team. Never satisfied. I looked at Cutter coming out of the locker, you know, coming off the field. He looked like he lost 31-6.
Yeah, he did.
I like that.
Yeah.
Mike Smith, you know, pissed off about the late Chicago touchdown. So I mentioned to Marpet. Yeah, Robert Ayers. So I said, hey, you're going into a dome, a noisy dome, building you've never been to before. Bucks have never played there before. Another challenge in terms of communication. Isbitz says, leave the guy alone, Kaufman. He's got enough to worry about without you bringing in the noisy dome. They're going to go on a lot of silent counts, Lee. That's going to be a big part of practice this week, starting today. And until they get on that plane and they do the walkthrough when they get to Minnesota, silent counts is going to be very important this week because, yeah, it's going to get noisy when the Buck offense is on the field. You got a neophyte center. There's your word. You can't spell it.
I can.
But there's a Y in the middle of that.
Yes.
There you go. And Minnesota's got a good defense on top of everything. I think the biggest challenge from the offensive line standpoint is Mr. Donovan Smith, who usually gets up for the elite defensive ends, and Everson Griffin's one of them. He's not an all-pro player, but he's a very good player. Gets about 11 sacks a year. He's very good on the strip sack, as is Noah Spence.
Mm-hmm.
So Donovan Smith's got to show up Sunday from that offensive line standpoint. But there's a challenge going into a noisy dome. I don't care how much you practice, Steve, on the silent counts. It can affect you one way or another.
I got a question for you, and I don't know this. This is why I'm asking. I'm not trying to show you up or anything. Is that a retractable dome in Minneapolis? Because the weather is supposed to be beautiful up there. For Minnesota in September.
Bob Hanson was telling me it's going to be 81 on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be in the 80s.
I believe it is a retractable dome, and so it may be open.
Mm-hmm.
It may be. But, Steve, what if the Vikings think it's to their advantage to have it closed with the noise factor? You never know.
I'm just thinking out loud because I am completely clueless myself. Why would Minnesota invest to have a retractable dome in Minnesota? How many times a year are you going to open it? You know,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a seem
about half the year. Like, for them, 80s in September, that's 95 for us. I mean, that's like brutal for them. So I don't know if they want to keep it air conditioned or not. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. If it's 81 there, it's going to be brutal. When I was there last time, kind of a funny story. 2 years ago, the Bucks opened the preseason in Minnesota. So I was out there for the game.
And did you drive?
No, I didn't drive to Minnesota. I drove around.
Did you have a rental car?
I actually drove probably about 100 miles. I had some family in St. Paul. I was visiting a family member in the hospital. I was all over the place. And anyway, so yes, I scared the crap out of Minnesotans.
They're kind of laid back up there.
They were not. It's a little more laid back. They did not have the dome ready. They were still playing at the University of Minnesota. And it was literally 90 degrees out, a record-breaking heat. And people are acting like they're, it's going to die.
They can't handle it at all.
Now, the stadium press box level did not have air conditioning.
Ooh.
No air conditioning in that stadium. And at that level, there were some suites, and Team Glazer had a suite in that level. So it was a little bit odd. You know how it is. Team Glazer keeps to themselves, right? So there I am, and, mowing down the angles of the buffet, the whole deal that we do. We just eat and eat and eat till the kickoff. And Team Glazer's everywhere. Ed's out there. Everybody's out there.
Wow.
That's highly unusual.
I'm like, what's going on? Right? I'm thinking about what's going on. Well, I was able to find out. Turns out it was so darn hot in their suite that they felt it was cooler out there. They had to mingle. So I'm talking to Ed for 10 minutes, and I'm all over the place with the Glazers.
Did you tell Ed you're a long way from L.A., my friend? This is brutal out here?
No, we actually had a very good business conversation, and it was the first time I actually had a long conversation with Ed, but I was wondering why they were out there, but it was from the heat. So anyway, stay. You can teach them all about the heat, Lee, when you head out there to Minnesota.
Well, at Ray J, just so our listeners know, the Glazers have a separate elevator up to their suite, so we don't see them. They're not in the press box. Although Brian came around
preseason.
I believe in preseason.
I was shocked. He was
He was checking on the chicken cordon bleu.
He was pressing the flesh in a press box. It's the first time I've ever seen him in a press box, ever.
All right, Iris. So out of the locker room, silent count. Obviously, it's a huge deal for Marpet. I mean, think of where he went to college. 2000's a big game in Hobart. This dome deal is a big deal. What else do you get?
We also talked to Mike Evans. He reiterated what he told me Sunday. I believe I broke some news Sunday night in my conversation with Mike Evans, where he told me that he thinks he was only double-teamed twice out of 67 snaps.
Wow.
Now, they weren't 67 passing plays, but, 34 passing plays. He only remembers two times that they rotated a second guy his way. He couldn't stop smiling. And the three of us have, we've said it many times on the show, and Evans' performance week one did nothing to put a damper on it. You put one guy on Mike Evans, the Bucks are going to feast.
So what you're saying is defenses are just a tad more scared of DeSean Jackson than they are Josh Huff?
And Lee, I say that where the Bucks didn't complete any long passes to DeSean Jackson. Wait till they start. Wait till a couple of balls start falling into DeSean Jackson's arms. 58 yards down the field. I mean, it's going to open up even more for Mike Evans. So.
Well, I liked what the Bucks did in the sense that you had written about this on JoeBucksFan.com. You wanted the Bucks to put the fear of God into the Bears, and even if you don't complete a pass to DeSean Jackson, you make sure his presence is felt. They did that.
You stretched that field.
Yeah.
We saw what happened last year. It was ridiculous. and that was a big reason why, not the only reason, but a big reason why the running game was so abysmal. Pretty darn bad last year.
It was, but for me, it's when a guy, and here we go, Doug Martin, worst yards per carry in the NFL. Worst. Not bad, worst.
And Charles Sims right there with him.
Well, don't get me going on Charles Sims.
Okay.
but anyway,
you got the stick carriers all stirred up about Charles Sims.
But deservedly so. But at any rate, it's a stretch for me to say that not having a field stretcher at wide receiver is responsible for a guy having the worst yards per carry in the NFL.
I said partially.
Yeah. There was
because you take that eighth guy out of the box, Steve. It does make it.
There's an element involved that you're on point, but.
Just in case anyone was wondering, Josh Huff does not have an NFL team. Nobody picked him up. Hard to believe.
Available in your fantasy drafts. correct?
He doesn't have a team. Oh, he's got no team. Team. Oh, okay.
you can pick him up. But
not only doesn't he have on a fantasy team, he's not on a team, period.
He's not on a real team, and Freddie Martino has not been claimed off the Bucks practice squad. So, you know, it gives you a little glimpse into what's going on or what the past was for the Bucks compared to now. So, Ira, what else do you get in the locker room today? What else do you sniff
well,
out?
Well, Gerald McCoy was talking, and I brought up a Mike Smith remark, and you gentlemen were there. I'm not going to walk into a Mike Smith press conference and not say something about Swaggy Baker. You guys know me. Like Lee is with Charles Sims, that's me with Baker.
Swaggy.
And, of course, you know, you saw my 10 takeaways Sunday night. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the stat sheet.
Where is it?
I got a goose egg. I got a zero, Stephen. Zero. You know, Freddie.
He did have a quarterback.
Adam Humphries might have had a tackle.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, for a defensive tackle, not even have an assist.
So I brought
but
it
he
up,
did have a quarterback.
I brought
hit.
It up to Mike Smith. Now, the running defense was outstanding. It was outstanding. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's mitigating circumstance. Mm-hmm. And Smith said, as he should, coming to his man's defense, in so to speak, that Baker did a good job of occupying blockers, as did. And McCoy always gets a lot of resources. But he said a lot of times he thought there were three or four bodies on McCoy and Baker. That opened things up for linebackers. And one thing that jumped out, and we got to make this clear on this broadcast, the speed of the Buck linebacker core is outstanding. That's what jumped out at me the other day with those tackles for losses. And if these guys are keeping the linebackers clean, including Swaggy Baker, then he's contributing. Now, I would like to see some tackles and an occasional sack, a quarterback hurry. So would you. So when I brought that up to McCoy, and I told him what Smith said about Baker and teams, you know, allocating resources, he agreed, but he still says, well, Warren Sapp was double-teamed, and he still ended up with 96.5 sacks, so that's no excuse for me. I want to put guys on the ground. As far as Swaggy Baker, maybe he'd be content to occupy blockers, and maybe in the Bucks scheme of things, it helps. Every little bit helps, but I don't think they're paying Baker that kind of money just to occupy blockers.
What Mike Smith said about Baker, and I agree with you, T.J. Ward all but said that. I talked to him after the game Sunday, and I asked, man, gosh, you know, hold these guys at 20 yards rushing. And he said, it started up front. He goes, those guys were clogging running lanes. They were tying people up. They were allowing the linebackers to roam. And boy, did they roam.
Can't get to the second level.
Yeah, boy, did they roam.
And boy, did they roam.
The linebacker play was just incredible. Even when Quan Alexander went out with an injury, they didn't miss a beat with Beck.
And with all due respect to Darryl Smith, who knows Mike Smith's defense better than anybody last year, and is a serviceable veteran, you know, brings leadership, he can't run like Kendall Beckwith or off the strong side. He can't. So Lavonte David looks rejuvenated.
Yes.
Quan's Quan. Mm-hmm. And now the question is, are these guys going to be all going to be healthy for Minnesota? I think there's a good chance they're all going to play. I'm a little more concerned about David than I am about Alexander. We'll see. Buck fans shouldn't panic. As I pointed out in my column today, this team is unbelievably healthy going into week two of the NFL. Now, a lot of it is they didn't play week one. I understand that. But they were healthy coming out of training camp also, which is a blessing. So, Steve, I'm going to back up my column and say, Lee, right now, a lot of things are going the Bucks' way. A lot of things.
He's dovetailing into a question I have. I don't know.
Yeah, real quick, just to clarify, we mentioned last podcast that in the locker room, Lavonte David told you bad foot. That was his issue. By the time this podcast comes out, we'll have an injury report. We'll see if his foot shows up. If not, obviously everything must be clear.
Maybe it was just cramps. Maybe.
And he might have had a cramp in his foot because we knew he had cramps too. So we'll see, but we got our fingers crossed. Go ahead, Lee.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember, and I saw Lavonte David leave the locker room. He was limping heavily. We're talking 40 minutes after the game. I don't ever recall a guy having cramps where he was limping 40 minutes after the game. Usually cramps are over with after 5 minutes. Painful as they are, they're over with. So that caught my attention. And when I heard what he had told you, I'm like, uh-oh.
And we didn't get a chance to talk to them in the locker room today, Quan or Lavonte.
Conspicuous absence, we'll call it. Both of them were not there. You know, a lot of times if the guys are hurt, they don't want
to
talk.
Treatment?
Could be.
Maybe.
It's not unusual. I've seen it before. I'm sure you've seen it before where – I have seen in the past Bucks officials shuffling a guy out of the locker room as the media is walking in so he doesn't get queried about injuries. I've seen that before.
And is it going to be up to me today, gentlemen, to ask Dirk Cutter about injuries and get a face full of Cutter where he says, injury report will be out in an hour, Kaufman. You read it and weep. you know, I did ask him last week, too.
Well, speaking of injuries, Sam Bradford there's a little gamesmanship involved with Mike Zimmer. I mean, Mike Zimmer's old school defensive meathead. What I mean by that is last week he told all the Minnesota reporters, oh, Sam Bradford's fine. Yeah, he's so fine he couldn't dress.
He's day-to-day. Aren't we all, Mr. DeKemper?
Aren't we all? Yeah. You know, I expect Mike Zimmer, if Bradford plays, to pull a 1960s high school stunt and have Bradford wearing a different number.
And McCoy hinted today, Lee. Somebody brought up Case Keenum.
Well, I was going to bring that up,
and,
too.
And that little kryptonite you called him, I believe, in your headline. I think there's a little motivation, a little extra motivation, as if they need it, to straighten out Case Keenum.
Well, Bradford, I've never been on the anti-Bradford bandwagon. I never have.
I think he's okay.
I saw, well, first off, when he was a rookie.
You don't think he's had a lot to work with.
Nothing
to work
with. I
can't argue with
you. He had over-the-hill Steven Jackson, and that was it. And he became, first off, he's back with his original offensive coordinator in St. Louis, Shermer. So that's part of it. And another part of it is he became a check down artist in St. Louis because, again, he had nobody to work with. Unless you call Tavon Austin a talent. Unless you call Kenny Britt a talent.
Now the Vikings are not overflowing. With weapons, not overflowing.
Running back, they do. But
they got Cook, and Stephon Diggs looks like a pretty good receiver.
Yeah, he's a decent receiver. Yeah, decent receiver. He's better than Britt. He's better than Tavon Austin. So the old Sam Bradford's coming back. Like I said, one time I just happened to be in St. Louis. The Bucks had a bye week. I just happened to be in St. Louis on a Thursday night game. And like, what the heck? I've never been to this dome before. I'm nearby. I'll go watch the football game. What the heck? And they're playing Harbaugh's 49ers that year, which won the division. Beat New Orleans in a classic playoff game, overtime, if I remember right. And Bradford was lighting up the 49ers. And they had an incredible defense that year. He was slicing through them. So I've never been an anti-Sam Bradford, but it looks like the old Bradford's back. So the people that are anti-Sam Bradford, they're wanting Bradford to play because they think the Bucs. I'm like McCoy. It seems like they have a little motivation to shut up Case Keenum once and for all.
Is it a stretch, Steve? Is it a stretch to think that Cutter, one of Cutter's main themes, if not the primary focus this week, is let's show a little more maturity than we showed in week two last year? Steve, you were very involved in that Arizona game. You got some good quotes.
You keep going back to that Cowboy.
Because it's the only scoop of note that you've ever got.
Thank you, Ira.
So
I have two scoops for you here right now in this podcast.
Is it a stretch to think that Cutter's dwelling on that this week?
No, look, the locker room imaging up that they've got on the TV screen in the locker room that goes to the players. Last year, that was also tied into the Surface tablets where they watch film. I got a story on JoeBucksFan.com that I typed up while we waited for you to adjust your fantasy team. What the hell was that, Ira?
I got it all straightened out.
Trying to tape a podcast. I was like, I need help. What do you need?
I got Dak Prescott. I got to move him up.
I got to drop Russell Wilson. Come on. What is this? So anyway, today's theme of the week. This theme of the week is passion. And let's face it, the Bucks theme last week, unbeknownst to Cutter, was, hey, we got this. Let's mail it in. We're going to Arizona.
Last year.
In their second game, we're going to kick their ass. So he's trying to ramp up the passion, I believe, to prevent what happened last year and get the guys on a super high-end energy kick for this game. And so that's a little bit interesting. But Ira, come on. Mike Smith, is there any chance? I'm asking you seriously here. Any chance in a news conference that he's going to say anything bad about Swaggy Baker?
Zero.
So what do we get? What did he say to you? He said, well, you know, these guys had four hands on them a lot and they held their own. Okay, that's nice, but that's what those guys do. That's what they do. That's their job.
The fact remains the run defense was spectacular.
How can you quibble? And Swaggy, you know, played, I think, about 30% of the snaps. And do you expect to see more of him against the Vikings or more Clinton McDonald? What do you think of that?
I think a fresh Clinton McDonald is a good football player, Lee. He might got a little. He's been injury prone with the Bucs a little bit. He gets worn down a little bit. I think that's one of the reasons they wanted that rotation at that nose tackle spot. If Clinton McDonald ends up playing the majority of the snaps at that position, I don't have a problem with that. With Baker as a nice compliment. McDonald looks fresh to me. I thought he had a very good training camp. You know, is he going to start? Is he going to be listed as the starter? No, Baker is.
Well, I think...
And McDonald's can live with that.
Swaggy's allergy to practices reared its ugly head last Sunday because, what, he only get like 17% of the snaps?
About 30. That's not a lot, Steve.
No.
That's not a lot.
He didn't have the stamina because he was always sitting on his rear end watching practice.
Now they're going in a controlled environment.
Like,
not going into a controlled environment, 72 degrees, so fatigue could be less of a factor.
Well, that and conditioning, he's got a week under his belt.
Yes.
I'm guessing he's taking more than three snaps in a row in practice this past week.
Cutter is very, very astute about players' stamina. Remember in training camp, one of the guys that he singled out while he loved the guy was Godwin, and said Godwin, he wore down late in practices in the heat. He's very aware of that. And he talked about a couple of guys on Hard Knocks, and then he talked about it, I think, after the game on Sunday, where some guys wore down.
He didn't mention conditioning.
He's very cognizant of that.
Well, that goes right back to what I'm talking about with Swaggy. You know, I can't practice. I don't want to practice. I don't want to practice. All of a sudden, game time comes.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting when he mentioned that about Barber, just because usually...
Yeah, and he mentioned it about Barber.
Peyton Barber, right. Yeah. Usually when you ask most coaches, or especially Cutter, about the game, he'll tell you, I didn't have a good view. I got to watch the film. But the game had just ended, and he's talking about Barber's conditioning. So, yeah, it means he really saw it, given everything going on. You know, and it's possible, of course, Barber said, I'm winded, I got to come out. Maybe he raised his hand.
Then Barber, for whatever reason, wasn't he pulled in the second half? He had some good runs, and they put Jackie Rogers back in?
Yeah, who knows?
If I remember correctly. Yeah, who knows? It was the second half, and the game was already in hand.
You think fatigue could have been a factor in Pamphile not playing as much as normal? Oh, so,
I don't know the whole story with Pamphile. There was something going on there, and if you even watch Jameis mic'd up on Buccaneers.com, but you see Jameis greet Pamphile before the game saying, it's glad to have you back. Maybe he had a touch of the flu, or maybe something was going on. I don't really know.
Evan Smith had some flu symptoms.
I should know. I don't know. But one thing I found out today, actually, I heard Jen Lane of ESPN talking about it, which I didn't know and I think is probably a good sign, is Jaquizz Rodgers had the flu on Sunday and played through that. So I heard Jenna talking to some guys about that in the locker room. So maybe we'll see a little more juice out of him.
What's that tell you? Like I said, I'm pretty sure Rodgers got put back in the game in the fourth quarter after Peyton Barber was breaking off 4 yards of crack. And he had the flu and they put him back in? Wow.
It sounds like the flu, there might have been a touch of flu around last week for the Bucs.
Well, there was. There was.
I mean,
we know there wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't make that excuse or anything. Guys are sick. Guys are sick.
Hey, guys. All right. One thing I want to
inject. Yes, sir, Ira. Yes, sir. Inject away.
Guys, it's a very exciting prospect. If the Bucs come back on that plane 2-0, and suddenly the big bad Giants don't look so big and bad.
They're looking terrible.
And we'll see. They got a tough game against Philly. Philly's not bad. Carson Wentz looks good. The Giants could be 0-3. We know what's going on with McAdoo. He's under a lot of pressure. He's calling out Eli Manning. Suddenly, you know, now the Bucs got to win this game, but 2-0, a sold-out stadium, heat for the Giants that they're not used to. Things could look very good for this franchise.
The fact Bob McAdoo is calling out a two-time Super Bowl winner, is the phrase under siege?
Well,
apt with McAdoo?
Steve, you follow the Giants. I think part of the reason
he's
that
a Jets
he did
guy.
It, Lee, I think part of the reason is that he feels Eli Manning can take it, sort of like Phil Simms took it from Parcells, and it didn't crack him. Mm-hmm. And Eli comes across that way and with his demeanor. It'll go off his shoulders. If he thought the guy had a fragile psyche, I don't think he would have said it about Eli Manning.
Lee said Bob McAdoo, who, of course, was the great Buffalo
McAdoo,
great shooting big man for
the
Buffalo Braves.
Buffalo Braves, yes. Big man
shows
of the 70s.
My age.
And then played for the Knicks.
And the Lakers.
And the Lakers.
And a lot of
That's
teams,
right.
Sure.
Here's a name for you, Ira. Flashback for you. The Buffalo Braves. Ernie DiGregorio.
Ernie DiGregorio. Providence, I believe, college.
Yes.
Great assist man. Great assist man. Reminded me of myself in my high school days when I was
when you weren't chasing Mario Berkowitz,
playing in the streets of Borough Park. When I jumped up for a jump shot, if you put a piece of paper above me, I don't think I could have got above that piece of paper.
Is it
that was my
that was your
name? That was my vertical leap. That was about a half an inch.
Going back to those street basketball days, I believe it was 1950 was the year.
PS 131 Schoolyard. Yes,
back in 1950, weren't you known as Curly K? Is that true?
Absolutely not.
No.
But I had a shot from the corner, Lee. I had to be open because otherwise if a guy's draped all over me, I can't get a shot off. But if some guy penetrates like Ernie D and dishes the Kaufman in the corner, that's money in the bank, Lee.
All
I could do is sit there and hit an open shot.
All right, let's not put these poor people from across the world through your nonsense. People are sitting there in
making myself sound like I'm Ray Allen over here.
They're sitting there in Bolivia listening to this. It's mind-boggling. All right, Ira, two pieces of news out of today's locker room. One, Adam Humphries, he didn't return punts last week. And I asked Humphries about it, and he basically said, you know as much as I do. Which was basically him sort of saying, well, nobody told me I got the number one job. And Reedy, and he went on to say Reedy did a great job in the summer.
I guess they want a little more juice at that position.
Later. That was a little bit of a surprise that Humphreys is punt return, only because he was getting my sources. You know who they are.
Yeah.
I can't reveal them on here, unfortunately. But you know who they are. Were telling me, hey, Adam Humphreys, when I used to say, he's safe, but he doesn't do anything for me as a punt returner. And I was not really scolded, but I was informed safe is good on a punt return because you're getting the ball back. You don't want to be, you don't want to try to make a play and botch a play like Tarik Cohen did. You don't want that to happen. So they were telling me safe is good with Humphreys as a punt
returner. Humphreys makes smart decisions.
So it looks like Reedy is the guy until he screws up. You know, obviously, Humphreys is a phenomenal number two punt guy. It's interesting. Humphreys averaged 9.9 yards a punt return last year, and the Bucs set a goal for him as of 10.0. So he actually hit the mark, and he got benched. So they are clearly looking for some juice. And Reedy, he's a rookie, technically, but he's been on practice squads.
Hey, he earned it in the preseason.
He's been on practice squads for 3 years, and he looked good in the preseason. So he's the guy, I'm sure, until further notice. Other thing, which I thought was fascinating, Iron, I can't not get your sage wisdom on this. I'm not even going to write it on Joe Bucs Fan until the podcast pops. I talked to Joe Hawley today. Now,
you are fascinated with Joe Hawley.
No, I've been fascinated with this fact for a while, and I finally got a chance to get Joe one-on-one without you mollusks around. And here's the deal. Dirk Koetter has said probably 8 times in the last month how much he loves Joe Hawley. Nobody loves Joe Hawley more than me. Koetter loves to say.
Son of a gun.
I love that guy. Okay. And he also has said that Hawley, which he broke on your podcast back in June, Hawley played at about 270 last year. And
He said 280, didn't he? Did he say 280?
He said under 280 is what he said on your podcast.
All right.
And that was kind of shocking. And, you know, Koetter has said recently that, you know, Joe's back up to 295 and blah, blah, blah. Now, Hawley's playing without a helmet. He was inactive last week. He's a backup center on this team, probably here because the coach loves him. And I finally got a chance to ask Hawley, you know, what happened, man? How did you go down to 270-something, and now you're up to 295? Were you sick? What was really going on there? Why would a center go drop weight like that? And he explained that when he blew his knee out, last year, but he still played through it. He said, I literally couldn't lift any weights. I couldn't do anything during the week, and I couldn't keep up my lower body strength, and I was losing muscle. And he said, Hawley told me I played the last game literally at 270. 270. So
you're saying he played the Dallas, the New Orleans game, the Carolina game.
Let's say this, Ira.
At 273.
Yeah, let's say, yeah, exactly. So if he played the last game at 270 against Carolina, that means he played the money game, New Orleans, the week before at, 272?
Two money games.
What was he doing out there? Why did they rot him out there at 272?
Well, I think you answered your own question. Dirk Koetter loves him.
Ira, why would they put him out there?
Well, the fact remains that the Bucs lost both of those games. Didn't run particularly well in either of them. Got pushed around a little bit on the offensive side. In retrospect, I think maybe Koetter makes a different decision. And Warhop, maybe they use Evan Smith.
Yeah,
at
that's
that
what I was
time,
thinking.
Lee. I mean, Evan Smith was healthy. So, you know, it's a classic second guess. But the fact remains, the last three games of the year, Hawley wasn't 100%, and it hurt the Bucs because he got pushed around.
Well, Steve's information is very interesting because it was clear as the season dragged on, Hawley slipped. Well, he was losing weight week by week.
270 in the year 2016 at center, Ira?
That's something out of 1971.
My high school in the 70s had a 250-pound center.
Hawley deserves a trophy for going out there playing against 310-pound defensive linemen. I mean, that's on a bad knee. I don't understand why Evan Smith wasn't out there.
And your dissatisfaction is not with Joe Hawley. He's a warrior trying to play.
He's trying to play. He's going to play if the coach tells him to put him out there. And he's, you know, doesn't mean he wasn't healthy enough to play.
And it doesn't mean that they would have beat the Cowboys and the Saints with Evan Smith instead of
Well, Ollie. The way Swing and Saloon Doors got ripped up in that Cowboys game.
It's just very interesting. A nugget that you only hear on the podcast.
Well, nice nugget. I think Lee is right on, though, that you know, Hawley's a favorite of Cutter.
Yeah.
And was not easily going to lose his starting job.
And to be fair, if you do go back and look at the New Orleans game, the box score there, and if you even go back and watch the game, it was happened to be like the one game I watched maybe four times this offseason. I became obsessed with it. They did run the ball pretty well. Jaquizz Rodgers, I think he had like 14 carries for 68 yards, and they had a decent day running the football. You could almost argue they should have run the ball more, but they couldn't answer New Orleans. And
no.
But interesting stuff. I don't know what Cutter was thinking, and probably what Lee said, which is a case of just being too loyal to the guy to throw out a center.
Hey, Lee, one more thing. You know, I don't know if you read my column today, but it was along the lines of things are going the Bucks' way, at least early. It'll change, but right now, you ride it, a winning streak. And nobody wants to see guys hurt, but Greg Olsen and Vic Beasley, two major players for their respective teams in the division. And then I said, the Saints might be healthy, but who cares? They stink, and they do.
Yeah,
nothing changes in New Orleans.
Although if I was a wagering man, I'm not really, but
you would have picked them to beat the Patriots like Isbins.
No, I would put money on the Saints beating the Panthers because Cam Newton looks terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
And now he's lost his main target.
And yeah, he lost his main
but
target.
But Carolina's defense looks good, Lee.
Not just his main target. They lost what's his face? Wide receiver.
Not Benjamin.
No.
Oh, okay.
Gosh darn, I can't think of his name. Ohio State.
He returned
a touchdown against the Florida Gators. Gosh darn it, I can't think of
it. You mean the veteran, the fast guy that they always used to have?
Well, he has struggled catching the ball.
Ted Ginn.
Ted Ginn. Who I think has been an effective player.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina's problem is their offensive line. They're just getting train wrecked left and right. I actually think, if I have to call an upset here, I'm not wagering this week, Ira. Not wagering. But I do think Carolina, it might be in a lot of trouble this week. Just because if they have to put up points, they might really be challenged because they just don't have the O-line.
And McCaffrey hasn't made an impact really yet.
Because they can't give him the ball.
They got no O-line. Newton's getting hit left and right. It's interesting. I wouldn't be shocked if the Saints won that, but I'm not calling an upset in the game.
Boy, a lot of troubles with offensive lines throughout the league. Look what's going on in Seattle. Seattle's a disaster.
You hear what Bill Polian said yesterday on SiriusXM?
No.
It's the worst he's ever seen. Worst he's ever seen. And this is something Steve and I were bouncing back and forth before we started recording this podcast. People are screaming bloody murder about Donovan Smith. And I think, you know, I tune them out because that's the same crowd that was screaming about Donald Penn. Well, they got their wish. Donald Penn got run out by Lovie Smith. How'd that work out? I'm not in the camp that Donovan Smith's so terrible. But if offensive line is this bad, Donovan Smith, at worst, is an average player. Let's think about it.
I think he might be better than that. I think he's better than that.
Given how bad offensive line is, yeah, that's number one. Number two is he never misses a snap. You mentioned this just a little bit ago on this very podcast. He steps up his game against the best defensive
end. He doesn't want to get embarrassed.
So as much as the PFF spreadsheeters and people regurgitate their feces like it's gospel, Bucks have no interest in getting rid of Donovan Smith either. Either get used to it or suck your thumb, curl up in a fetal position and suck your thumb because he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
And Steve, Giants, another team. Disaster. Giants, Seattle.
Just watch that game and try to tell me Donovan Smith should be benched.
Even,
give me a break.
Even Dallas's O-line, vaunted O-line, was manhandled by Denver last week. Manhandled. So, all of a sudden the Buck O-line doesn't look too shabby, Steven.
I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'm pretty sure the only fourth-round picks cut this year were offensive linemen. And that says a lot. That tells you about the depth and the quality.
They gave up on that quick.
The only two guys in the fourth round cut this year so far were O-linemen. So that's kind of interesting. And I don't have the confirm in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that's spot on. All right, Ira, as we wind down on the podcast, we do have a couple of interesting things to hit you with still. So don't go away.
And I got those one listening to hit you with.
But, of course, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Go to their websites, edmorriscadillactampa.com, edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. Great offers. Hit up their websites. And tell them Ira sent you, which is always a good thing. You'll be back Sunday, Fox 13, Scott Smith's Tailgate Sunday, 10:30,
right.
With your name spelled correctly.
And maybe a little more time to pontificate.
This time in studio, a little more time.
Comfortable studio.
For those,
so I get to meet Paul Delgado again and lovely Leslie.
Also on Friday, you can look for Ira and Buccaneers.com. The old pewter panel is back. And, of course, who do they call? They want their sage wisdom from the king of all Tampa Bay media.
You better not ask me about Charles Sims over there.
Who's lovely Leslie?
Not Leslie. Whoever does the weather with Delgado. I forget.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
So they're going to have you on Buccaneers.com. Ira, I want you to make sure that they have your Twitter handle right. Last year they put you on Pewter Panel. They didn't have the right Twitter. They were popping up your old TBO Twitter on the screen.
Right.
They spelled your name right. They got that right. All right. So, Kaufman, look, I need a prediction out of you for this game. I need to know a score, and I need to know a peek at what you think is going to happen. Bucks Vikings.
24-17. Visitors.
Okay.
24-17, the Bucks go 2-0 with the Giants coming to town before a sellout, rabid crowd with a couple of Giant fans sprinkled into the crowd, Lee. I think it'll be a day for the Buck offense to get unraveled. They were a little bit out of sync. Not terrible, but a little bit out of sync. Mike Evans, of course, always shows up, always. So I'm thinking a little more O.J. Howard and a little more Deshaun Jackson. Bucks win 24-17. That's my pick.
All right. Lee, you had a final follow-up for
Ira? Yeah, this is going to be a tradition here. I think I started it last week. Given your expertise and years, your 40-some years in the NFL.
I went 4-10 and picking against the spread week one.
But I thought your fantasy team was 2-0.
Oh, I am 2-0.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Well, first off, did you ever go to the old Metropolitan
Stadium? Did I ever go to the old Met?
Fran Tarkin.
No, I went to the Dome many times.
Because you started covering NFL in 79?
79,
now
it's
right around the time that they got that Dome in there.
I did not go to the old, but I can still see that pass from Roger Staubach to Drew Pearson.
Offensive interference, man. But football games, whether Bucks or not, in Minnesota, what springs to mind? Any memories? Any stories?
Bucks game in Minnesota. Well, let me think. I think I only went to a couple of Buck games in Minneapolis. I went to some playoff games with the Vikings in the early 80s for UPI. Why? Do you have something?
People like to hear your stories.
Hey, if you got nothing, you got nothing. All right, it's okay.
Nothing with the – oh, yeah, I do have something. First road game. It might have been 05 or 07. It was one of the good Buck seasons when they made the playoffs and lost the first playoff game. They went up to Minnesota, and they did a job on Dante Culpepper, who I believe had a big season the year before. And it might have been opening week. And you know what I remember most about that trip, other than the Bucks victory?
What, you had a Juicy Lucy?
No. The bed in the hotel was the most comfortable bed I've ever slept in. The Hotel Sofitel. I believe it might be Scandinavian hotel. And it was a fantastic bed. Now, I was there alone.
Ira, I'm ending it there. I get out of here.